Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The music world has never really seen an artist like Modest Yahoo, the Orthodox Jew who has mixed rap, rock, and reggae into a sound all his own, acoustic or with a band, for more than a decade. Growing up in White Plains, Modest Yahoo was drawn to bands like Phish and the Grateful Dead before eventually committing to Hasidic Judaism in his early 20s. His Jewish identity has been a key part of his lyrics, but he's enjoyed broad support from fans and collaborators of all stripes. One year after his last appearance at Helsinki Hudson, the Grammy nominee will perform an acoustic show as part of his Festival of Light tour on December 11th. And Modest Yahoo, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. I wanted to ask you about growing up in the lower Hudson Valley. What was your childhood like?
Well, I grew up in White Plains, New York. Actually, when I was in about fourth grade, we did a trip to the Hudson River, to the lighthouse, and took photos. And I have a picture that I had entered into a contest of the lighthouse in on the Hudson River, right down there in Tarrytown or somewhere right there. Croton Point Park, that's where I was, yeah. So I grew up in White Plains, New York. White Plains was a great city to grow up in. It was, there was good community. There was all types of people, all backgrounds, good exposure to culture and music, and that's where it started for me, so yeah.
How did you get the jam band bug in the first place?
Well, I guess it started in 1980, New Year's Eve, Oakland Coliseum, Grateful Dead. My parents were living in Berkeley till I was 4 years old, so I believe they had me at all those first New Year's shows in Oakland and Berkeley, California. But the first show that I went to really was a Phish concert. It was when I was 16 years old, the Centrum in Worcester, Mass. And that night, that experience, that concert, I would say was one of the fundamental experiences of my life with music that sort of changed my whole view of music and what it could do and what my role could be and what I wanted to dedicate my life to. I remember leaving that night feeling that one way or another, I needed to be around that was my place somewhere in the music world.
When you say it changed what you thought you could do in music or what your role could be, what did you see it as being in the first place?
Well, I always knew I loved music, and it was always unclear to me because I sort of had to write my own rules and make my own path in terms of figuring out what type of music I wanted to make, how I was going to make it, what my instrument was, how I could express myself. And so the typical way just didn't really work for me. I had gotten a guitar. I didn't really learn how to play it. I had tried out different instruments. I had been in different choruses. And it wasn't really until I started listening to music and just having these sort of just deep moments with music, you know, when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, driving to school, at home, whatever it was, just listening to music and starting to get influenced by it. I was trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? You know, am I going to rap? Am I going to sing? Am I going to, you know, how can I bring it all together? And I think I left that night from that concert feeling not any closer to knowing how I was going to get my voice or what I was going to do, what it was going to look like, but knowing that from a very deep place within me that I was made to make music, that's what my purpose here in this world was going to be, that was how I could contribute and that was what I was meant to do. And like I said, that came from a very sort of inner and sacred sort of spiritual place where I just had that clarity. You know, then I spent more time, you know, trusting and trying to figure out my sound.
Yeah, how did you end up getting there? Because you can hear the Fish influence certainly and some of your music, but you have an incredibly unique sound. And I wonder, you know, who was like the role model for you and how did that path from teenage fan of the jam band scene to being on stage yourself play out?
I began listening. I was listening to not only to Fish and to jam bands, but I got really into listening to music, reggae music, and Bob Marley in particular. So that started to speak to me, and then some newer artists, like there was one artist in particular, Sizzla, and I just latched onto him and to his early records and the Bob Marley records, and you know, they had this what they had was this like place, this canon to pull from that kind of gave weight to the things that they were saying. So it was like this blend between them speaking their truths from their place of truth, but also the weight of something eternal that they were drawing from. And what they were drawing from is the Old Testament, you know, and you know, writing lyrics and writing songs based on those stories and quoting David and Solomon and all those things. And I felt an immediate sort of pull towards that, because not only because of the music and the way it was speaking to me, but I felt there's something in there that also I have a connection to, you know, something there in the Old Testament that I have a connection to. So later on, when I began to really study and get into Judaism and Jewish mysticism and Hasidus and all of that, so I sort of realized at that point that, okay, you know, this is, you know, going to be where I can draw from. You know, all of these things I'm learning, all these books, all these beautiful words that I'm reading in the Torah. And it won't really be different than from what those guys were doing, except that it'll have a different context, because I'm not Jamaican and I'm not, you know, I'm not necessarily even a reggae musician. I'm just... You know, I was influenced by these two things, by this reggae music and by this sort of quest that I was on to sort of find my identity, find my spirituality. And for me, I just jumped into Judaism because I knew that that's where I came from. So I felt a pull in that direction. So then, you know, my first year, I was in yeshiva when I was living in Crown Heights, and I hadn't listened to music in over a year. I had sort of thrown away or just given away all my records, and I wasn't even really listening to music at all. And then I had started performing out a little bit, and on Fridays we used to go into Manhattan and we used to, you know, go around and ask people, "Are you Jewish?" Give them Shabbos candles and say prayers with people and tell them about the Torah portion or whatever. So I started going on Friday to Dumbo to a studio, and I started incorporating kind of like all the ideas and all the studying. I was studying like 12 hours a day, you know, all the things that I related to, and just putting them in the context of this music that had influenced me, this reggae music and Fish and growing up listening to hip-hop and all that. So I just began to kind of blend all those things together and put a voice to it.
You know, you've mentioned kind of thematically your interest in the Old Testament and how it influenced you artistically, but I wonder musically, you know, Jewish worship is very rhythmic and singing has played a huge role in the way, you know, Jews communicate with each other through history. So did the actual, you know, melody influence you as well?
There were some things that influenced me. I mean, like when I would sit in yeshiva, so Thursday nights we would get together and we would drink and we would sing. There was basically all these Hasidic songs that are referred to as nagunim, because most of them don't have any words, and that's the term for melody. And and they're basically old Russian songs, folk songs, but you know, they were written by these very, you know, holy men, by these rebbes, and sung throughout, you know, since, I guess, 1700s, 1800s, and they became very holy. So I started to use some of them in song. I started to rework some of those. I would say a handful of them, and incorporate kind of my music into them, and try and also still hold on to the traditional music. And I had some great experiences with those songs. But I would say mainly in my music, in the way that Judaism has influenced it in a big way, is through prayer. And because I always knew, I think from that first, you know, Fish concert that I went to, that there was a potential for divine experience through music. And with Fish, it was all musical. You know, it wasn't really about the voice, but it was through the instruments and what that could bring, where it could bring you to. And I think for me, I started to sort of just see, like, okay, well, I can combine, like, when I'm singing, when I'm saying these words, I can be praying. This can be directed towards God as well. And I spent a long time within that world exploring, in particularly the avenue of prayer within different groups, within different Hasidic groups and different styles and forms, and experientially trying out different things. And I think through all my time there, that was the biggest gift that I got, was learning how to speak to God and to use that in my music as well.
If you hadn't become a popular performing and recording artist, what job would you have taken on? I mean, did you ever consider being a cantor? Would you have been a rabbi who studies the Talmud most of the day? What did you see yourself doing?
I don't know. I guess I could have gone a couple directions. I think potentially I could have gone in the sort of more religious, spiritual direction of studying and spending most of my time involved there, you know, maybe living in Israel away from things. But I always love working with kids. I always worked with kids before, you know, I was making a living as a musician. I was working for Family Services at Westchester, and both my parents are social workers, so I grew up around that kind of work. So probably something with that. My biggest, like, fascination or thing that I'm obsessed with is psychology. So I could have maybe potentially done something like that, working one-on-one with people as well.
Did it take a while for people to take you seriously? Because I remember when you first broke kind of nationally, there was a certain level of novelty to seeing, you know, a man in a full black robe with a full beard, an observant Jew, also rapping.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, it depends on how you looked at it and the type of person that's looking at it and their capacity to, I guess, sense truth or experience whatever they, you know, experience. Like, you know, some people immediately would not be able to wrap their head around how things that seemingly are so split, so separate, can come together. And so initially it helped because, like, for example, when my managers were trying to get me on a talk show, so they got me on the Jimmy Kimmel show. And they didn't necessarily want me to perform. They just wanted to talk to me, and, you know, that was going to be sort of like this funny thing of this rabbi who sings reggae music. And we, you know, the managers were real clear that I had to perform, and I did the performance first. And I think after that moment, I kind of, you know, anyone that had a sense of music or that was watching that got a sense that, oh, you know, there's something more to it. So, you know, of course it helped, and it always helped. And I knew that was something I was going to use to my advantage versus something that would be used against me. But before I was even religious, before I ever had a beard or a hat or I was wearing a suit, you know, I was performing at open mic nights, and I would sing, I would get the band to play No Woman, No Cry, and I would sing that song, Bob Marley's song, and then I would insert my own freestyle, sort of more current dance hall kind of chanting kind of thing. And I had a certain energy on stage, that was kind of electric, and people would feel that. And it was, I was always, you know, just this like white kid getting up on the stage, but when he opens his mouth, you know, he's singing like Barrington Levy or Bob Marley or whatever. And that I knew right away was going to help me. So once I started getting into Judaism and I started really going deeper and deeper into it, I never really thought, oh, like, this is going to hurt me. This is going to be something that's going to, you know, people won't take me seriously. I said, no, I believed enough in my talent that if I could get them to hear me, if I could just get the opportunity to make music that, you know, it either wouldn't matter or it would be something that people would think was cool.
What about from within the Hasidic community itself, which can be pretty insular to the outside world? Have you had a lot of support, or has there ever been any kind of pushback about your level of fame and, you know, kind of what you do for a living?
Well, it's always been a little bit of a ups and downs and all kinds of opinions. You know, like they say, how many Jews does it take to screw in the light bulb? You know, like a minion, let's say 10, you know, one person to do it and 9 to discuss what's the right way to do it. You know?
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, I was in a very small community in Crown Heights, a kid that just came into that community like any other, what's called Bal Tshuva, most of the time, you know, kids that haven't been able to find their way or fit into society and are searching and looking for something. And so, you know, not paid, you know, that much attention, but taken into the community and sort of being taught how to live like a chassid, how to be a Hasidic Jew. And then all of a sudden this kid is like, you know, jumps up on a table one night, you know, and sings his songs, and then starting to get opportunities to play shows in Manhattan. And within, I don't know what it was, 6 months to a year, I was on TV shows, national TV shows. I was touring, you know. I was playing, you know, pretty big festivals with, you know, I was on stage with Trey from Fish, you know, who I was just, you know, 6 or 7 years earlier was, you know, had dropped out of high school to go follow around the country. So, you know, and then I, you know, got married, had kids, and, you know, it's like everything just kind of went from there. So there was always opinions. There was always a lot of opinions. And I think that when that particular community, which is very, you know, revolutionized the whole Jewish Orthodox world in the sense that they were very much believing in outreach and reaching out to Jews who were not religious and trying to bring them into the fold. So at first, you know, it was like they were just like, wow, you know, this is, you know, this kid came here and now, you know, can be a huge tool for us. And so there was a lot of pressure at first. And then I began, as I do, to find my own way in it, you know, and that took me several years to do, but I began to find, you know, my truth and my confidence and my belief in my own ability to make my own decisions. And as I started to do that, I definitely ruffled feathers. And, you know, I went through it. I went through the whole mix. But, you know, and then all along there were very close friends and you know, people that I would consider family, that, you know, my kids would be at their house every day. And at a certain point, it was like there was a certain understanding I felt between me and the community where it was like, oh, almost a relief that, like, now they didn't have to take any responsibility for me. But yet I was still living in the community and I stayed there. And, you know, I had become, you know, very successful with my music, but I didn't leave. I was still in the, you know, second story of a duplex on Crown Street in Crown Heights. And my kids went to school across the street at Lubavitch Yeshiva. And, you know, I was walked to synagogue every day and walked home and, you know, very much still there. So, and then it was cool, you know, it was like it grew into a place where I felt very comfortable. And, you know, since then, you know, I've moved to California and, you know, continued to find my own way through it.
Well, Mattis Yahu will be back on this coast on December 11th for a performance at Helsinki Hudson. and it's an acoustic show that's part of his Festival of Light tour. Again, December 11th at Club Helsinki Hudson. Madis Yahu, just a pleasure to have you on the roundtable, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.